There are no collaborative robots. What there are collaborative applications, and those can lead to great productivity and cycle time improvements for manufacturers. What we do at Vail Robotics is we make it possible to have collaborative applications that involve standard industrial robots.
Welcome, everyone, to the Robot Industry Podcast, and hello to our listeners in St. Paul and St. Charles. My name is Jim Beretta, and I'm your host. My guest today is Patrick Sibovero. Patrick is the co-founder and CEO of Vail Robotics, a company that brings advanced computer vision and 3D sensing to industrial robots, allowing them to work side by side with humans in manufacturing processes. Patrick has more than 25 years of experience in computer vision, robotics, and industrial automation. Prior to founding Vail Robotics, Patrick was the first entrepreneur in residence at Siemens Venture Capital, focusing on the creation of the vision behind Vail. He also served as the VP of New Growth Platforms for Avery Dennison, building a new business line in RFID-based IoT products. He was president of Rethink Robotics, creators of collaborative manufacturing robots, and founded and led the computer vision startup IntelliVid to its acquisition by Tyco International. Originally trained as a computer scientist, Patrick holds a PhD, an MS, and a BS in computer science from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Well, welcome to the podcast, Patrick.
Great to be here, Jim. Thanks very much.
Well, we said in our intro there that you've got a lot of friends who've been on the podcast, so we're very excited to have you to tell us a little bit about Vail. So for those people out there listening all around the world who don't know about Vail, can you explain what you do and what problems you're solving?
Sure. We make a 3D safeguarding solution for industrial robots, standard industrial robots from Fanuc, Yaskawa, ABB, and KUKA. And what our system does is it makes it really easy to add human-robot interaction to a work cell that involves a standard industrial robot. Our system uses 3D time-of-flight sensors that we provide, and it's a safe system. It will be certified to ISO 13849, so that's the same standard that you'd use for any electronic safeguarding, electro-optical safeguarding equipment, such as a light curtain or an area scanner. But it provides a much more comprehensive solution, a solution that allows 3D vision and semantic understanding of what's going on in the work cell. That makes it much easier to install. We reduce the total cost and complexity of human-robot interaction.
And so how did you get started? I know in the bio we kind of mentioned kind of where you got started, but how did you get started?
At Vail Robotics?
Yes.
When I was many years ago, when I was the first president at Rethink Robotics, I wrote the business plan, which was really the first business plan for a venture-backed collaborative robot startup. And we went out and talked to many, many different manufacturers, some of whom are our customers today. Our approach was always to go down the manufacturing line together with manufacturing engineers and talk about problems that they had and solutions they were looking for, and generally brainstorm about what the needs were. Rethink Robotics, of course, went in its own direction, and I left the company, actually, after a year and 10 months because they were very focused on building a humanoid robot, which I didn't see as responsive to customer needs. But we've seen power and force limited collaborative robots be very successful in industry. All the same, when going down manufacturing lines at, for example, durable goods manufacturers like automotive OEMs or tier one components makers or major appliances or you name it, often that power and force limitation that makes the current generation of collaborative robots safe for human interaction also posed real limitations for those manufacturers. Power and force limited robot can't reach as far as a standard industrial robot. It can't move as fast, can't be as strong, and sometimes not as repeatable. So I was in the BMW factory in Spartanburg when I had the idea for Veo Robotics, and that was back in 2009. I knew that the technology of the time, the computational power and the sensing capabilities of the time wouldn't be sufficient to allow the implementation of it. But I always had it in the back of my head, and Clara Vu, my co-founder, was a contract product manager I was working with and visiting customers with at the time. And so when I saw that the technology had, the base technologies we would build our solution on had moved ahead sufficiently, I joined Siemens as an entrepreneur in residence, and I called Clara up and I said, hey, you know, it's time to do this thing. So that's pretty much how we got started. We have another co-founder, our VP engineering, Scott Denenberg, who I had also met years before, and we put together a proof of concept, an early prototype, and set out to get a safety certification, a functional safety certification. So along the way, we've raised almost $40 million with top drawer investors like Google Ventures and Lux Capital. Siemens, of course, has been great to work with, and they are an investor. But you know, our latest round was led by a European investor, Alpha Intelligence Capital, and we are on the verge of receiving our functional safety certification.
Oh, well, that's wonderful news. And at Veo, you're robot agnostic, and that's correct?
That's right. It takes us about a day and a half of a single engineer's time to add a particular robot model that's compatible with one of the controllers from the four robot manufacturers we work with. So we have, for example, added those major construction equipment maker, had an early version of a new FANUC robot. We were able to add those without ever having one of those robots at our site. And we can also bring on other robot controllers, new controllers from other manufacturers in pretty quick order. That's a longer process, but it takes a few weeks to get a new controller model up and running, and then only a day and a half for the individual model of robot.
And I assume once you've got that controller or that robot kind of built into the system, then it's just copy-paste, correct?
That's right. Of course, manufacturing engineers do very complicated work in work cell design. And, you know, this gets back to what we were saying at the very beginning of the show, where there are no collaborative robots, there are collaborative applications. And so a manufacturing engineer has to decide, you know, what is the human doing? What is the robot doing? What is, you know, what is the other equipment in the work cell? And, you know, how do I make sure that this gets done in the cycle time budget that I have? How do I make sure that the process step is done with high quality and high repeatability? But what we've sought to do for manufacturing engineers and our systems integrator partners is provide a product that is really easy to put in as the comprehensive safety solution for the work cell, and really easy to integrate. Typically, we're talking about a day or so to get the system connected and configured for working in a safeguarding application.
Thank you for that. What do you have a best like bullseye customer, or is it obviously you mentioned automotive, but is there any other particularly focused industry targets that you're going after?
You know, we of course have done a bunch of work with both automotive OEMs and tier one automotive components manufacturers, because they are so sophisticated in their use of robots. And traditionally, as you know, they accounted for the biggest chunk of new robot sales in the industrial robot industry. That said, automotive makes up probably about a third of our customer set. We also work with consumer packaged goods makers. We work, we have aerospace customers, people earlier in, you know, kind of the component supply chain, people who might do something like, say, metal casting or the provision of other components into products. So we will work directly with a manufacturer or through a systems integrator. Being a good partner to systems integrators is really one of the keys to success in industrial automation. And so we've launched a certified integrator program, and we hope soon to be able to announce our first certified integrator, which is a really superb integrator. And we're looking forward to doing an announcement together.
Well, that's great. I agree with you that integration and having good integration partners is key to success. What hardware and software then comes with VO? And do you see much, obviously you probably love kind of greenfield sites, but do you see much work in retrofit?
Let me answer the first part of your question first. We've needed to develop both hardware and software, although most of our engineering team is actually on the software side, just because of the intelligence of the system and the amount of computer vision computation it has to do, and the sophistication of those algorithms for dynamic modeling of what the robot is doing and controls and so on. But in terms of the hardware, we have to run that software on very high performance computing hardware. So we make a device called the FreeMove Engine, and what it has inside it is two entirely separate dual processor motherboards that are doing a tremendous amount of computation. They're very high-end Intel processors on those boards, as well as an external, inside the box, but off those motherboards, there's another motherboard that we built and designed that has a safety processor on it. And that safety processor is checking the results of those two computations being executed independently on those motherboards against each other. So we have dual channel redundancy inside that FreeMove engine, which is what we call that box. And then we also develop dual channel sensors. And those dual channel sensors are IP65. They have two separate imaging elements and optical paths. And then there's a safety-rated FPGA that is comparing pixel by pixel the sensing on those two separate optical paths to each other. You can attach up to 8 of those sensors to one of our FreeMove engines, which gives us the ability to monitor work cells as large as 8 by 8 meters and get a full 3D view of what is going on in that work cell, whether it's people moving around, we recognize the robot, its end effector, the work pieces it's carrying, other hazards present in the cell, and anything that is large enough to potentially be a human that we don't have a CAD model that's been loaded into our system for, we're going to treat that as a human, and we're going to control the robot to maintain a protective separation distance and bring the robot to a safe stop before a human can reach it.
And that's good to know. I was going to ask you about the system differentiating between somebody with legs and maybe some tooling that I have to keep away from.
Yeah, there's a tendency, I think, among, say, folks who are enthusiasts in computer vision and robotics when they're getting their education. You know, imagine a university, a doctoral student and their advisor, and they say, well, we're going to use machine learning to recognize people, and then we'll be able to identify people in a work cell, and we'll be able to do robot controls that way. The difficulty with approaches like that is that machine learning really is a kind of statistical pattern matching approach that depends, its success depends very much on the size of the training set. And, you know, it's good enough so that, you know, Google or Facebook can try to find pictures with your friends' faces in them, but sometimes they'll get it wrong. Well, we can never get it wrong. So our approach is much more deterministic. We don't use machine learning in any part of our safety function precisely because a statistical approach isn't good enough for us. We have to know, and we have to therefore, you know, be absolutely certain that the robot can move safely before we allow it to move at all. So anything you do to our system, you run a forklift into one of the sensors, or, you know, you power off the box, or destroy the box in some fashion, we will always fail to a safe state. And that's what a lot of our FMEAs and FMEDAs are about, and why we've had to, you know, build up from the component level that safety case. And it's taken us, took us 3.5 years to get our FMEAs and FMEDAs done in the course of our hardware design. You know, as Clara says sometimes, that, you know, rather famously around 5 years ago, Mark Zuckerberg said that his philosophy at Facebook was move fast and break things. And Clara, our CTO, says you can't move fast and break things if those things are people.
Absolutely.
Safety is absolutely crucial from our point of view, and it's a deep ethical responsibility as well as a business imperative.
Of course. If I was to walk by a VO powered robot cell, what would it look like? How would it be different?
So what you would see would be mounted probably overhead, although you have full flexibility in where you place these sensors, but probably somewhere overhead, either at the periphery or directly overhead in the work cell. There would be these green boxes, and they're maybe about 10 inches by 6 inches, and those house our sensors. And of course, they say Fail Robotics on them. And there are cables coming down from those. They're power over Ethernet, and they go into our controller, our free move engine, which is a separate box about the size of a robot controller, a small robot controller. And then there are cables that go from that into the robot controller. And that's how we slow and stop the robot. And that would be what all you see. You asked the question earlier about whether it's greenfield or retrofit, and the answer is both. You can add this system as a retrofit to an existing cell, and you know, it's really a matter of placing sensors correctly, and we have intelligent software that allows you to register those sensors. You don't have to do like a bunch of, you know, calibration and so on. We can use the robot as a fiducial to figure out where the sensors are located in 3D space. And again, that's key to making it really easy to set up this system. But you might not even notice the presence of the Veo system, because we try to take a light touch on the robot controller. We don't replace it. We supplement it. And our sensors are built to be really easy to put in flexible locations. And what you would notice is that if you approach that robot, it would slow or go into a safe state when you were close. And if you walked away, it would resume operation automatically.
I think that's always the best way to tell.
Yeah, that's right.
So who's your customer? Is it health and safety? Is it the applications engineer or the plant manager? I mean, on the manufacturing level, of course, at the integrator level, it's probably someone else.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as I don't need to tell you, since you've been in the industry for quite some time, there are manufacturers who insist on buying direct, and they have the internal capability in their advanced manufacturing group to assess and build applications, and of course we work with them. We also have systems integrators as customers, and we see them as really key to our strategy. They can resell the FreeMove system, and we support them with training and marketing collateral. But, you know, what I'll often say when explaining this to somebody who doesn't come from the industry is our customer is not a washing machine manufacturer or a car manufacturer. Our customer is the person inside that entity or outside that entity who makes the factory. Our customers make factories. They make lines, they make cells. And so that's who whose needs we're really seeking to address, whose problems we're really seeking to solve. And so health and safety, of course, are in the room on any solution that involves human-machine interaction. And we absolutely spend time with those folks. And it's one of the key reasons why, even for sales within the United States, where it's not mandated by law, we've gone for a functional safety certification from TÜV. Because we want to answer that question right up front. Is this a safe solution? And in Europe, of course, it is a requirement under the law to have that functional safety certification before you install that equipment in a manufacturing facility. And so it's been part of the plan from the very beginning.
That's great. And how are you getting invited into a plant or a facility? Is it all word of mouth, or as some of the other guests on the Robot Industry Podcast, they've actually recommended and talked about you. So I'm wondering, how does that work?
You know, it's a combination of things. It isn't always the case that startups have experience in the industry they serve, in the market that they serve. And if you think about it, if you read, say, TechCrunch or Wired or one of those places where startups are written about, a lot of what they're talking about is consumer products and services. It makes sense. You know, if you look at the companies with the highest valuations that are trading in the public markets today, they are often very consumer-facing companies. Our approach was to try to be really good citizens in the industry from the beginning. So, we got a participation in the standards committees, tried hard to make a good contribution there. We did know a number of people in the industry already. And we were able, I was talking to some customers in consumer packaged goods about this company before it was incorporated. just making sure that we're really responsive to customer needs. And to a great extent, it's been word of mouth. We actually did first show our own hardware running our own software at the FabTech trade show in November of 2019. So that's about a year ago, more than a year ago now. And through all those, this is a highly referential group of people. And so by making it very clear that what we're seeking to do is serve and provide something that is of value, as opposed to, what people like to talk about as disrupting markets and so on. That's not us. Our goal, we see making things as so fundamental to human prosperity and fulfillment and success, and we love factories, and so our approach from the very beginning has been, let's make something that makes that more productive, makes it better, and we feel very very much on the side of the angels with that. If we can make it less expensive and more responsive to consumer needs to build a new class of refrigerator, well, that's good for everyone. Similarly with transportation, anything you want to talk about along the way, people tend to forget about factories. They just assume that things come from stores or whatever. It's so crucial to all of civilization. And we love factories, so it works out.
I'm a big fan of factories too, and I think it's exciting that you're making a product that makes it safer for people and equipment to work together. What's next for Veo? Where do you see the technology going?
Very much, again, customer driven. One of the things we hear from, for example, an aerospace customer is they would like us to cover larger volumes. So I mentioned, 8x8 meter work cells. If they're doing something like, say, manufacturing the wing of an aircraft, they'd like to be able to cover that entire wing, and these wings can be very large. We also think about more complex applications. So free move one controls one robot at a time. We'd like to make it so that we can handle multiple robots, robots that move, for example, on rails over say 30 meters. So we'd like to expand the volume that we can safeguard at once. And, we have, some advanced work on that. We've already filed some patents on it. And, another thing that has happened, for example, in logistics, but not really so much in manufacturing to date, is the use of AGVs. If you look at manufacturing, the processes are far more complex than the processes in, say, e-commerce logistics. And so the use of AGVs has been a little bit more complex, harder to integrate. And by being able to monitor large spaces, including the ones that both people and AGVs are moving through, we can help there. We'd like FreeMove to be something that you can just depend on as a manufacturing engineer when you're designing a process step and designing a work cell. It's there, it's present, just like you got 480 volt three-phase electricity and you got 120 SCFM compressed air. You've got human machine safe interaction available to you.
Thank you for that. We've got some great challenges ahead of you, and I can hardly wait to see it in action at the next trade show when we start going back to trade shows again.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a problem for the industry that, of course, the pandemic has been a global tragedy, but particularly in our industry where you really want to be able to see things in action and really believe them and understand them. It's a shame that we haven't been able to do that, but we certainly look forward to being able to do it again.
Yep, I'm going to be first in line to get my shot. Hey, Patrick, how can people find you and find out more about Veo?
So our website is veobot.com, veobot.com. I can be reached at pgs@veobot.com. We're always delighted to talk to anyone in the industry. So please, anyone listening, feel free to reach out. We are adding integrators to our certified integrator program, there are great incentives and support. So we're happy to talk to anyone in the industry and see if we can be of help.
I'd like to thank our sponsor for this episode. So thanks goes out to NuScale Robotics, who design and build the QSPAN automated small part measurement systems that automates digital caliper measurements, data logging, and part handling. QSPAN picks, measures, records, and places. The QSPAN system is the new standard for QC solution for high mix, small batch manufacturing, and works with Universal Robots' line of collaborative robots, so it's easy and safe to deploy in your QC lab. I'd also like to thank and acknowledge our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. A3 is the umbrella association for RIA, AIA, MCMA, and A3 Mexico. These four associations combined represent almost 1,300 automation manufacturers, component suppliers, systems integrators and users, research groups, and consulting firms throughout the world that are driving automation forward. I'd like to thank and recognize our partner, Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They're a web development firm that offers SEO and digital social marketing and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools to unify marketing, sales, and operations. They can be found at paintedrobot.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us at the Robot Industry Podcast, our email address is therobotindustrypodcast@gmail.com, or you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Traction Industrial Marketing, and I'd like to thank my nephew, Chris Gray, for the music, Chris Colvin for audio production, my partner, Janet, and our sponsors, A3 and Painted Robot and NuScale Robotics.